Welcome to the Building Design Primetime Podcast, focused on providing valuable information for anyone looking to undertake a new build or extension project. We'll share our tips, tricks, and stories from a building designer's perspective.
Welcome to the Building Design Primetime Podcast. I'm your host, Amelia, and once again, we're joined by Frank Geskis.
Hey, Amelia. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Again, love Fridays.
We do. What are we talking about today?
I thought we'd talk about change of use. And to most people, that means nothing, that term. It's a term that we use a lot. It's like converting something into another use. So we've had a few cases where someone's come to us, oh, I'd like to convert this church into a house, or recently a old boarding house into a house, a shed into a house, All sorts of things into a house. So you're changing its original use into something else. So a house is not always a house, you know, because like I just showed you that one on the internet that's for sale down at Campbelltown, that beautiful bluestone church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very gorgeous.
Very tasteful. What do you reckon the heating bill's like?
Pretty expensive, I'd imagine. Be pretty cold in winter if you don't have good heating.
Yeah, exactly. That's what these old churches are. That one would have to be 150 years old.
Oh, easy.
Nothing compared to the European ones, but like in Australia, that's pretty old.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just thought I'd talk about converting pre-existing usage. The old warehouse, converting warehouses into homes.
That's a common one.
Well, not around Tassie, it's not as common as it is on the mainland, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane. You know, the bigger cities, you've got these old warehouses and turn them into something. It's a fair slog to do it. You know, it's hard. Yeah. So in the case of we've done quite a number of churches, been able to successfully convert them into residences or part residences, or if it's too difficult, we actually use the church as another purpose and then we build a house off the back so no one can see it. And you link through the church as well. So there's all different ways of doing the boarding house I mentioned. I've had a look at this boarding house and converting that into a house. I'm not going to tell you which council this is in because I'll get on my soapbox again. But the planners didn't like it because it didn't look like a house. And says, well, doesn't matter, we're changing the use, so it will look like a house and act like a house and it'll be just like a house. So investigating those types of projects, and what we come across and we point out to customers is, well, it's all nice and romantic to do these, but your biggest challenge is going to be thermal performance. Every new house that we do design your house in Tasmania, currently it's 6-star, other states it's slightly different, but it has to meet a 6-star thermal performance.
Okay, so here's a question for you. Say, for example, we're looking at the church situation where you do an extension off the back and have that as the livable area.
Yes.
Is the church at the front then included in the thermal performance assessment or not?
No, that's the purpose behind it.
Ah, okay.
So you actually have compartmentised, so there's a separation between the two. So one is meeting the current specs and the actual church itself, and you may use it as a rumpus room, call it anything you want. You're just using the space. And the beauty of that is you're not actually damaging the building trying to upgrade it. Because you imagine 100-year-old windows.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, some of them are painted shut and all that. You can't get air movement through it and it's not easy. I've seen some old ones. I'm thinking the one at Bishno, it's all Baltic pine lined. It is beautiful. You know, it's really old weatherboard. And it's just really cute and all that, and you wouldn't want to touch it and damage it. It's just magnificent. But being heritage, you want to be able to use it because then people maintain it, keep it up to date. So I think it's really important that you've got to make a choice early on. Can you convert it into something or do you add on the back? We just finished one in La Brina, converted the church, came with an active cemetery. So wow. The community's still using it and the owner got her license to operate that, which is a special process, and I've forgotten the name of that role to be able to look after it. So the locals can still arrange to have their family members or whatever buried on someone's front yard of their converted church to house. Figure that out.
Wow. That's really a new definition for I see dead people. You literally would from your window.
Well, literally, because you drive up and there's just headstones everywhere.
Yeah.
It's not a very big sight. And that's the one I think I mentioned earlier where they had trouble getting the septic or wastewater system to work in the backyard. All the graves are well documented, but there were some soft spots.
Some soft spots?
Yeah, I'm leaving that alone.
Oh.
But we had to convert that church because someone already was living in it and they sold it something to live in and then found out they never got a permit for it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so where the old altar area was, that was the kitchen. They popped a mezzanine and then get a ladder up, go to the bedroom. All of this was crazy illegal because they never got permits and you can't climb up to a bedroom with a ladder under the building code. You've got to have a staircase.
Oh, dear.
So anyway, we worked with the customer. There was other things like, well, they're going to heat the space all day, every day because they're living in it 7 days a week. Unlike a church where it might be heated once a week, so it's then left to the elements. That means the building operates differently, plus you've got different moisture, humidity inside the building.
Sure.
So potentially condensation problems, it's not well insulated, they couldn't open the windows, the original Gothic arch type small pane colonial windows. So they had to try and work on those without replacing them. And we were able to insulate the roof, which was pretty unusual, it worked well. We had to ventilate the floor because it was all timber floor, there was no ventilation, so we upgraded that. The bathroom, someone already put a dodgy bathroom extension, so to rip that out and upgrade that and went on and on and on.
Oh, it's a bit of a process when you don't get your permits, isn't it?
Well, it didn't even apply for it. Just did it.
Oh, wow.
And those people from the mainland bought it.
They didn't do their research very well, did
they? Research, no. But we were able to help them to do it. It was a slog. It took us a couple of years working with the buildings fire. So it's hard. If you do it from the start, it's always going to be hard. You know, I did another one out at Elizabethtown, and that was heritage listed as well, and we were very limited what we could do inside this. So we ended up building, we were allowed to build a couple of rooms for a bedroom, living and all that. And then the rest of the space was kept as per original. Mm-hmm. And they used that however they saw fit. And we're able to extend off the back, put a whole new bathroom in, laundry, happy days.
Yeah,
put
nice.
A deck off the back. But from the road, you couldn't tell the difference. That building will be there for a long, long time because now it's being lived in. These are the things you're going to find challenging. So it's always romantic to try and convert something like that. We get quite a few people want to converting a shed into a granny flat or something like that. That can be more difficult in a lot of cases because some of the sheds, they might have a concrete floor, but they didn't put plastic under them. So if they don't have plastic, that means it doesn't stop moisture coming up through the slab.
And I think we have mentioned that it's actually a whole nother podcast. So if you're interested in that, check out our other podcast on sheds.
Yeah, yeah. So converting sheds into another dwelling can be very, very challenging, can be done, but needs to be assessed pretty early on whether it can or can't be. I've had plenty of people want to try and convert them into granny flats and we've knocked a few back. It's not possible cost effectively. You're better off starting again. Another favourite of mine, and it seems very simple, even you said this, converting a carport into a garage.
Yeah, that blows my mind. You would think that is so easy to do, but
you'd
apparently
think so,
not.
You? No, well, normally most carports, they buy them as a kit and they put them up. All steel, no worries. Now, the design from a wind load point of view, the wind will go through it. You put walls on it, it becomes a big box, you've got and each wall's like a sail.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to put more wind load on the existing structure. So then you've got to look at how do I convert that, how do I change that, and then you find the engineering costs more than a new garage.
Oh, wow.
Well, not, that's a bit of exaggeration, but by the time the hassle that you go through with it, it's hardly worth the effort.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, people are just trying to make it as cheap as possible, but it's not simple. Converting a warehouses, that's a really interesting one too. Again, thermal performance. You know, I've had it where they want to use the same stairs. So the stairs don't comply with the current standards outlined under the construction code. Again, the floor. You don't know if the floor is suitable because of it's been used for a different purpose. Has it got plastic on it? Is it waterproof? Is it even level? Bushfire.
Yeah, that's a good one. I would never have thought of that.
Yeah, you may not. And then putting on new bathrooms and stuff like that through them. And that's not unusual. You go put new bathrooms in. But then you're cutting up the floor, trying to get the plumbing to work. So there's lots of things to be considered when you're trying to convert something in a different building use class. Now, here's the interesting one, planning approvals. You may want to change the use, but are you allowed to under the zoning?
Yeah, so you've got to look up the Tasmanian planning scheme.
Yep, exactly. Or on plan build, you can go through that to have a bit of a look and then lead you on to greater detail. So you can see you can get caught out. Another favourite of mine is converting, you know, really old 100, 120-year-old weatherboard homes, like nice big homes, and they've been made into multiple residences. You know, it's a lot of uni students used to use them and stuff.
Yes.
And trying to convert them back can be really hard.
Really?
Yeah, because sometimes they've done them properly and they're putting walls in and they're firewalls. And they've actually, when you do a firewall, the structure has to be discontinued, can't go through the wall. So then if one side burns down, it burns, but it doesn't burn the other side down. That's why you cut the structure right down through the middle. So by doing that, you've got to then pull the wall out, then you've got to resupport everything. So it can be very difficult.
Yeah, so it doesn't always sound like the most cost-effective option.
No, I'm converting offices into residences. We do that in Launceston a fair bit, Hobart, where you've got lots and lots of shops and you've got all this space up on top. So then you've got two different building classes, top and bottom. Now, to meet the current regulations, you need fire protection, fire resistance from the bottom level going up, and you need acoustic protection from each level. So someone downstairs, let's just say it's a shop or if it's an office, they don't want to hear someone upstairs walking around. So that's like that hard mechanical noise, but walking or dropping something or whatever it may be. But also you don't want to hear the noise generated by talking or by TVs.
Their favourite Nickelback song.
Oh, of course. And that's actually harder to meet.
Really?
Yeah, rather than the fire. It's quite a common thing to do, to put residents above offices. And there's nothing wrong. It's a great idea. You're building these little studio apartments. The stairs have to be fire isolated. There's quite a bit in that.
Yeah, big process by the sound of it.
It is. We've done it quite a number of times and it's worked really well, multi-class. But then we just did one recently and they were about to go for the residential, but they found that there was lack of office space. So they quickly changed back to go to office space again.
Yeah, right.
So then you got the same class on top of each other, so you don't have to meet as stricter regulations. So the upper story office to residential conversion, that's been done heaps around town here in Launceston to get that inner city living going, and the council's really pushing to have that done. But there's a lot of work to go ahead to do that. But at the price of housing, it can actually work very well.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, yeah, lots of different types of buildings we convert to houses. And,
wow.
And there's also now a bit of push because office space, and I'm talking a bit bigger office space here, where the working from home phenomenon since COVID is causing problems with leases, where businesses don't want to lease the space anymore because they're finding people working at home, it's working quite well. So what do you do with all this leftover office space?
Convert it.
The owners still need to make money out of these things. So it's worth talking to your designer or architect to, you know, see if this is possible. Get a feasibility study done to see, is this possible to convert? This I found looks awesome. Is it a church? Is it a warehouse? Is it whatever? Can I convert this into something, into a residence?
Here's a different situation. What if you have a property and it's your home and you want to run a business from your house?
Great question.
How does that work?
From a planning point of view, every council is slightly different, but generally you can have a home-based business subject to what it is.
So, again, you would have to check the
planning scheme, what they allow. So if you're, let's just say, you're a marketer, you're someone that can work from home, you're a professional, you're a lawyer, you're a building designer. I know plenty of building designers that work from home and they just set up in their bedroom and that's fine. If they have meetings there, maybe, maybe not. Not sure, everyone's a little bit different. It depends on the scale. So if it's a true home business, it's just one person working there or partners working together on that, generally that's okay. It's when you get into someone's run a panel beating shop out of their garage. Mm-hmm. Generally not.
Okay.
If you're on a big, be your own home mechanic and customers' cars everywhere outside and dead bodies of cars, you know, you've got to be real careful of that, and it's frowned upon if you're making too much of a nuisance and visual nuisance. It doesn't look very nice. I've had it where we built a brand new house for someone and they wanted to add their own hairdressing salon. That wasn't a problem, but they wanted three basins so she could hire more people to work in there. So then that deemed not home business ended up being a separate class. So we had to put fire rating between, because so house on one side, hairdresser on the other side. And that's okay. If, as long as you're well prepared for it, it's okay. If you're just doing a single, doing a bit of work at home by yourself, that's fine. So again, do your research, but it's a very good question of you're converting something, you know, for home use. Now, here's the trick, and I learnt this off some articles, but check your home insurance.
I have heard this one before, whether you're covered or not, if you run any sort of business from home.
Yeah, and I heard some pretty horrible stories. And even people running vans, you know, coffee van, food vans and stuff like that, that triggered it as well. So you really got to check your home insurance, whether you can do this or it's specifically on the insurance. Like you got a van, you could have whatever it may be, it's got to be declared. If they find out, they could null and void your insurance. And also council wants to know what's going on too, so it doesn't get out of hand.
For sure.
You know, you do the right thing, it's generally not a problem. So again, they're converting something into something, you know, a change of use. And this also comes back to, you know, how we spoke about doing your research when you're buying a house.
Yeah.
Or buying a premises.
Definitely.
Is it suitable for the intended purpose, you know, or what they've claimed the purpose is?
That's a really good point.
Because I've seen it on light industrial sites where there's a big shed there, they run their business out of there, and they've got the house on the site. Has it actually been approved that way? Again, lots and lots of research, and we keep banging on about this, don't we?
We do, every week.
Because you don't know what you don't know, and it breaks my heart when people buy stuff and they haven't researched it properly. And it could be this purely, oh, I can run my business from here, I can do this, consolidate everything, be great. And you've assumed what you've bought based on the information the real estate agent, and I'm not having to dig a real estate agent here, because as far as they're concerned, all the permits should have been done and approved. Go talk to the council, get permission to look at all the permits. You have to do that without a doubt. Never assume that it's always correct. And if you want to convert something, like a boarding house or a warehouse, come and see us. You know, we can do feasibility studies. We do lots and lots of feasibility studies for people. Just say, oh, can I fit a unit in the back, you know, for investors, do a granny flat? Can I convert this? We do lots for commercial people. Like, this is going the other way. We're converting a house into a commercial, i.e. a medical centre.
Oh, yes, I have seen that done before.
Turn to doctors, psychiatrics, physio, podiatrists, doesn't matter. And we've done stacks of those. Hard work, because then you're converting from a house, which was fine, you're converting commercial, which means you need to meet the access to premise standard, which means the disability access into the building and in all areas of the building.
Yeah,
so your door widths have to be a certain width, your hallways. There's a whole bunch of regs you've got to meet, and most houses will not meet the requirements.
Accessibility might be different.
Well, that's it. No, that's it. It's accessibility, access all areas.
Yeah.
And you can't discriminate, nor should you. Everyone's got the right to be able to get into a public building with someone with services. Someone's got the right to be able to work there with some level of disability. And they should be able to access all parts, whether, you know, to every meeting room, office, toilets, kitchenette, waiting area, reception area, parking, inside, outside, from the street, in, all these things. And we see a lot of people invest, you know, wanting to do houses into commercial premises, not thinking about this type of stuff and getting themselves into a real bind.
Yeah, right.
And it's a tough conversion.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, longer process. Get through everything.
Very much so. And they've got different thermal performance requirements there as well. But it's the access is your big one. Yeah. So, again, talk to your designers, architects, building surveyors. They should be able to assist you with it. They should be able to write a report to saying whether you can do something or not.
All right. Well, let's wrap up with some take-home points. You've sort of made a few already there. So what's the first thing anybody should do if they're looking to change the use of a building? Do you think a feasibility study is the best option
100%.
As a first point of contact?
So you're paying someone to do the research on converting something And then they can look from a planning point of view, building point of view, and any other regs or overlays that the council may have under the planning scheme.
So that will hopefully bring up any potential red flags.
Totally. Now, are those red flags easy to deal with? Yes or no? And that's what, you know, a feasibility study should be able to give you. And please be aware, there's plenty of planning professional planners that do this really well, but from a planning perspective, not all of them can do it from a building perspective as well, which are two very different things. So you need a combined report.
Okay.
Yeah. And same with, if you go a building surveyor, they can't necessarily comment on the planning. It's usually the architects and building designers can assist with both. In a lot of cases, if we find it really complicated, we will engage a building surveyor in their expertise to write a report on our behalf on that. Even sometimes need to get a fire engineer involved.
Wow.
Yep. Or a bushfire assessor. So, hey, can you make comment on this? Is this going to be a problem or not? So, and that's why feasibilities are worth the money to do before you purchase something. Or if you're even you already own it and you're thinking of doing it. You're well informed before you get into it. Now, I suppose that's the case. You've got to be well informed because it's a lot of money to change things. It's even more money when you've got to change it back or it differently because it doesn't comply. Because your old mate, builder, wannabe, does some changes a few things. Yep, she'll be right, mate. And I've seen that on ramps for disability access. I've seen it on ramps, doors, made their own disability bathroom, which was, I know your eyes just lit up then. This is when the conversion of house to commercial, I've seen some shockers.
Oh, dear. So obviously some of the tradies don't know either.
Well, a lot of tradies do, but there are some that aren't and they haven't asked. No different with someone converting a shed into a house or something like that. They haven't done things quite right. But most builders know what they're doing. But a builder shouldn't actually have started without a permit.
That's very true, yes.
So that sends alarm bells with me straight away. If a builder's done some work and they don't have a permit to produce to do the work, something dodgy going on there.
So to make it pretty clear, any change of use will trigger needing a permit.
Yep.
Yep.
In one way or another. So it might be easy, it might be hard. You don't know until someone investigates for you.
Any other take-home points?
Don't buy something that they tell you what it is without doing your research. So if they reckon you've got a home-based business or they've converted something, get the documents, get the permits. Again, I've seen that as well. People bought this, think they could run their business and they can't.
And then it's shattering. And it's awful when they've, got all these dreams in place of what they want to achieve and they can't actually do it.
Yep. Awful. And it happens, I'm afraid, because they're not checking, they listen to everyone else bar the professionals. But that's really the takeaway. Talk to the professionals.
All right. Talk to the professionals. Do your research. Come and see us. We'll do a feasibility study for you if you need. And we might wrap it up there, Frank. Happy Friday and thanks for listening to the Building Design Primetime Podcast.
Catch us later.
You're listening to the Building Design Primetime Podcast.